I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausland, the United States Army retired artilleryman, CBS News visiting Professor Dickinson College, CEO Diamond Six, Leadership and Strategy. The attack on Israel, on Bethlehem, on Jerusalem, on the Holy Land, on Tel Aviv, has it turned a page? Jeff, I report to you that I was surprised. And I watched it in slow motion because those drones took 4 hours to get there. A colleague of mine reports to me that he took his family to the shelter. He's in Jerusalem. And he went up on his balcony and waited. And then the sirens went off. And then we saw the light show above. Is this the future, Jeff? Did we just walk into an alternative reality that is worse than we imagined? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It may well be the future, but certainly we've already seen it in the recent past, and that is, in many ways, this attack by Iran upon Israel is not terribly dissimilar than the attacks we've seen by the Russians against Ukraine and their efforts to refine their employment of three different types of weapon systems: slow-moving drones, ballistic missiles moving rapidly, and cruise missiles moving somewhere in between those, and are using those particular capabilities to try to neutralize their defense networks to facilitate the arrival of the ballistic missiles in particular. But the large number of those also could have been intended perhaps to try to numerically overcome the defenses. And that is brought about, of course, as well, particularly on the drone side, by the relatively inexpensive cost of the drone. And as a consequence, the ability of countries now and in future to use more and more of these particular weapon systems in one single attack.
The attack itself was not successful in that it didn't kill anybody, didn't take any buildings down. But we're told there were even more missiles launched and that many of them failed. Have you heard that, Jeff? And what does that tell us about Iran's intentions in future?
Well, the Wall Street Journal, I believe, carried an article that said up to half of the ballistic missiles that were launched either failed to launch or crashed en route, which is a pretty startling number. The one thing that's for sure in the aftermath of this attack is that Israel, coupled with its allies, the United States, France, Great Britain, to some degree Jordan, and others, did a coordinated air defense effort that was far superior to the offensive efforts that the Iranians could mount. And in the aftermath, if I was Iran right now, I would be terribly fearful, because what was demonstrated on Saturday night and Sunday morning was the qualitative a technological advantage that is certainly enjoyed by Israel and its Western allies over Iran, if in fact this particular conflict should escalate further between these two countries.
And then we come to the fact that Iran does not act alone. There are reports that there were missiles fired from Yemen, North Yemen, that would be the Houthis, from Iraq, that would be the militias, if confirmed, the Kataib militia that had Hezbollah that had attacked outposts in Syria and Jordan before, and possibly also from Syria. Certainly there were missiles fired from Lebanon that would be Hezbollah. So we're looking at a coordinated effort on the Iranian side, and that they can follow through with the next attack. Why would they attack again? Because of this debate over retaliation. Jeff, what is proportionate response?
Well, clearly, first of all, you're right. It was a coordinated attack by Iran and the so-called Axis of Resistance. But that part of the attack didn't surprise me so much as there was an attack which emanated from Iranian soil. So to pause for a moment, I think we need to understand, underscore the significance of an attack emanating from Iranian soil, which kind of ends the so-called shadow war between Iran and Israel that's been going on many, many years through those particular proxies. But there's no doubt now, as we talk about a response, what in fact could Israel do? And the response, I think, will be characterized by the type of capabilities employed, the timing, and the targets. Capabilities could be some combination, certainly, of ballistic missiles, the Jericho 2 and 3. They could use aircraft, certainly, but the problem with aircraft is the Israelis have only a limited refueling capability, and they'd have to violate the airspace of several countries in between, Saudi Arabia, perhaps, Jordan, Iraq, and as a consequence, either pull them into the conflict or run the risk that they might shoot down missiles heading towards Iran or shoot down aircraft. They might do a cyber response. They might do an attack, but have that attack in response only be against IRGC targets, on the territory of Syria or Iraq, but not on Iranian soil. They might do a special operations attack and do that sometime in future. Certainly the Israelis have done that in the past with the assassination of senior Iranian military officers, scientists, and others. Or the Israelis could do some combination of all these particular efforts. Again, the timing will be important. I think they'll wait and see how the vote in the United States Congress goes for a military aid patch, which now has $14 billion going to Israel. They will want to make sure that occurs. They'll want to, I think, enjoy it for some period of time, the kind of boon they've gotten in global support around the world, which was at its nadir only a week ago. Things have changed, John. A week ago, we were lamenting the fact that Israel was more and more isolated in the aftermath of an errant airstrike which killed seven humanitarian workers working for the World Central Kitchen. Now Israel has enjoyed a certain degree of positive international support in the aftermath of this attack, and they'll want to see if that translates into more and more international efforts to isolate Iran. And then lastly, the target set. What do they strike back in Iran will be key. Do they go after, for example, solely the launch sites from which these particular weapons came on Saturday night? Or do they go after drone factories or missile factories that produced Iranian weapons? Do they go after Iranian economic infrastructure, oil fields? Or could they even consider trying to damage Iran's budding nuclear programs? So all those things and the combination of timing, capabilities, and targeting will color this response on whether or not it's limited, obviously, will be in the eyes of the beholder. And then the next question and the next move will be up to the Ayatollah and the Iranians.
You've mentioned Hamas, the Gaza war, not forgotten. Hezbollah, I mentioned quickly within these last hours, the report is a drone attacked North Israel, 18 injured, one seriously. I don't have any more updates on that. But Hezbollah remains an extremely threatening presence. And we can imagine that any serious or overwhelming or effective strike on Iran could light up Hezbollah. Does that mean, Jeff, that we have to consider that Israel must go north as well?
Absolutely, John. As the Israeli leadership is trying to consider their response, I think one thing they're going to have to think about is the grim realities of the day before the attack on Saturday night. Israel is confronted right now, I would count it, a five-front war, a war in the Gaza Strip, an impending major offensive into Rafah, where 1.3 million people are now crammed as this war has proceeded southward through the Gaza Strip. A very likely pending conflict with Hezbollah, as you rightfully point out, which in many ways is a much more serious military force than Hamas and has at least 150,000 rockets and missiles pointed at Israel from southern Lebanon. Increasing violence on the West Bank, threats from groups in Syria, Houthis firing missiles from Yemen, not only at commercial shipping, but also at Eilat and Israeli southern ports. So as we try to figure out how we respond to Iran, we must make sure we got sufficient capabilities to take care of that five-front war that confronts us right now. And in the case of Hezbollah, that you rightfully point out, is a great concern, because there are some 80,000 or more Israeli refugees that have moved out of northern Israel and want to return to their homes. But right now, based on the threat posed by Hezbollah, that's not possible. And then last but not least, John, it cannot be forgotten that by Israeli count, there are 129 hostages still being held by Hamas, six of whom are Americans. And in the immediate aftermath of the attack on Saturday night, Prime Minister Netanyahu announced that Hamas had rejected the most recent Israeli ceasefire and exchange for hostage proposal, and in fact had increased its demand, saying that it would only release 20 hostages, but raising the demand significantly on the number of Palestinians, and particularly Palestinians who are being held under life sentences for various things they had done in Israel, that they would be released in that particular exchange. So the fate of the hostages is also wrapped up in this. And a major attack, I think, against Iran might scupper any possibility, at least in the short term, for a negotiated settlement for a ceasefire and the release of at least some hostages.
Finally, Jeff, the phone call, Ebrahim Raisi, president of Iran, to the Kremlin to talk to Vladimir Putin. It's suggestive, that's all. However, I ask the question that can't easily be answered. Is this one war? Are we seeing our adversaries coordinate?
Well, they certainly are coordinating, but these two guys need each other. Mr. Putin needs Raisi because Raisi has now become an important contributor of drones and even missile components for the Russians' ongoing conflict in Ukraine. And Raisi needs Putin because Raisi wants to make sure Putin is going to protect him as issues are brought before the UN Security Council, for example, to condemn Iran for this particular aggression. Raisi also needs Putin because Raisi is a candidate to replace the Grand Ayatollah, and so underscoring his close personal relationship with a major power like Russia can only enhance his particular candidacy in that regard. And then last but not least, there are now growing important economic ties between Russia and Iran, and that is the trade routes moving south through Iran, through Russia, across Iran to Bandar Abbas on the Indian Ocean. And I would dare say, John, is if you're a Russian looking in the future, and you look at the Baltic Sea now surrounded by NATO countries, having access to that particular port via Iran might become more and more important in future.
Colonel Jeff McCausland, United States Army retired, CBS News, Dickinson College visiting professor, Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy CEO, the other war in Eurasia, Ukraine. When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.